I remember Ed Driscoll from way back when I started doing comedy. He was starting out as well.
Me too.
You do? Yeah. You remember that guy?
Yeah, sort of. Whatever happened to him.
Yeah, he's hilarious. Good stand-up, great comedy writer. He's written for Dennis Miller, Billy Crystal, produced television. We both have our demons, and he's written a book about coming to terms with a few of his and actually doing stand-up for them. Do you do stand-up for your demons?
For my demons, yeah, they're my best crowd.
The book is called Spilled Gravy, Advice on Love, Life, and Acceptance from a Man Uniquely Unqualified to Give It. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks. Great to follow the president's
well, you
inventory.
Reach out. Yeah,
so that's good.
Yeah, that's
what happened to anonymity, the poor guy?
I know. You know, do you think that he is actively in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous? I know we're not supposed to talk about this stuff, but I think he's gone.
But we're going to.
Yeah, I think he's gone the Christian route. I think he's just basically said that I think he's a dry drunk.
One soul at a time. Yeah.
One soul.
That's what he's doing.
He's going to take one soul at a time?
One at a time. This is sad.
So this book you wrote is actually put out by Hazelden.
Yes, it is.
Is this the...
And I didn't ask them to, so it's kind of weird.
How did that
to
work?
To be suing people like that. Well, no, honestly, I wrote the book, and you know, and it wasn't supposed to be like a recovery tome. I just started kind of writing about my life and what was going on, and part of that was recovery, and part of that was trying to meet the right person, and part of that was the weird life I had in Hollywood and how all those three were intertwined, and... you know, a lot of different publishers were nice enough to express interest in it, probably only, you know, when I had to drop other people's names. You know,
right, yeah, yeah.
So Ed Driscoll, no. Billy Crystal, Dennis Miller. All right, we'll take a look. It's so sad. Like, I don't think they've ever had to drop my name to get any of their stuff read, but I'll do what I have to. Clearly, I'm here with you, my friend. So here we are. But so a few publishers started looking at it. And Hazelden was just cool because, I mean, because they have the recovery thing. But they'd never done, like, a funny recovery book.
Right.
And so many the publishers, so they were real interested in that. And what I liked about it, too, is they got other publishers to say, well, can you make it this, though? They want to, like, change your life in a bad way. Or, like, we're going to change your life story. And,
can you die at the end?
Yeah. It's like, believe me, I can die right now. Just hold on the line. Let me test my weight on this support beam. So a lot of places wanted to change it. Some of the other publishers.
Yeah.
They want this and that. And Hazelden was like, we love it, and whatever you want to do. And it's like, look, I have to compromise on so many of the things I do in Hollywood to make a living. You know, writing shows, you'll write jokes. Executives don't want it in there. They have to come out part of the game. And I thought, you know, the one thing I'm going to cling to and make it my story is my story. And
right.
Hazelden was all for that. And they're like, they said nothing about take anything in or out. They're like, whatever you want to do. And so that was fantastic. And we went with them. And I got to tell you, when I was working on it, too, the woman that was editing mine or taking care of it, she goes, yeah, I've been enjoying it. You know, the other book I'm working on is Suicides. I said, well, I hope mine's funnier than that, or we got a big problem. I mean, first of all, you know, that one we know how it's ending.
Yeah.
But, like, my book, you don't know.
Because
so.
I went to the website, and I've got a link to the website, because you can get the book there. And all the other books are they're heavy-duty recovery books, most of them.
Yeah, so it's good and bad, and that, you know, you're, like, in that section, it's all bummed-out people. And I'm like, can you put it in humor, too? Because I think you got a better chance at getting to people through humor than everybody in the bummed-out section. It's actually what it's called. It's not recovery. It's not
bummed-out.
Bummed out section.
Yeah, it's
here's
the,
Ed Driscoll.
Right, hopeless.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
The hopeless section.
I'm Bob Hopeless.
No, but what you stand to gain from putting a book like this out is very appreciative people, very appreciative fans. You're not going to get the regular
Yeah, well, that's not
dude!
Paying for my trip to Cabo, is it?
Yeah, maybe
saved
it will.
A few lives, big deal, man.
Oh,
you know,
come on.
I got a wife and a kid on the way now. No, I mean, it seriously is the nice... thing about it, because it does resonate with a lot of people. And,
so,
you know,
when you were writing it, though, like, I wrote a book a few years ago about me, because I don't know what else to talk
what
about.
What else are we going to write about?
Yeah, I have no idea. Did you find when you were writing it that there were moments where you're like, oh, man, I forgot about that. That was the worst experience of my life.
Yeah, that was pretty much every one of them. Thank God for friends of mine that were through this. Like, I don't remember doing that. Oh, that's pretty funny. I better write that down.
Yeah,
half of it I didn't remember. So,
like, which is the one that? What do you think is the most revealing story that you have in here?
Oh, boy.
Or what's the one that really makes you laugh at yourself or almost
none
cry?
Of them. You know, it's not that funny to me. I had to do it. It's one of those things that, you know, it's like you see somebody, like, throw up at a restaurant. Like, if you're at that table, you're that guy. It's not so funny. But if you're just enough tables away, it's hilarious.
You're
so,
the
like,
guy that...
I did this stuff. It's not that funny to me. But to people around, the stories seem funny.
We're memorable, though. That's the weird thing is, even if it's not funny, you're the guy that ruined dinner for the other people.
That's
like,
it.
Someone years away is like, remember that time that guy threw up at the restaurant?
Oh, I wish I could remember that.
But, like, because you talk about, I certainly used a lot of drugs and drank a lot when I was working, but when was the...
Not enough.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to talk to you about.
Oh, let's get back. Let's just go get high. Yeah, come on, man.
You know this segment ends with us drunkenly swinging at each other.
Well, Andy Dick's coming in tomorrow. You should have waited a day.
Oh, good Lord.
I'm sure he's going to bring an entourage and some stuff. All right. That's going to be good radio.
And probably good stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He's got some money.
Does he? How does that? Oh, no, we're going to get into it. Where the hell does he get money? What the hell is he doing? How does he get money?
I don't know. He's been on a bunch of series.
Yeah, I guess so, but you figure he'd probably gone through most of that money. Well, I hear he lives
in a
commune or something, in an apartment building with a lot of other people. I don't know. He owns a building. Let's not go there now.
I don't know.
You know anything about him?
He's still living off Get Smart Jr.
Oh, come on. So when you were doing stand-up, though, this is like, I was trying to remember some stuff that happened to me. Where was that moment where you're on stage and you realize, I am just too wasted and this has gotten too ugly to do this?
I want to get up and say, hey, let's hear it for Bob Lazarus. That's the last thing I remember. That was one of the comics. No, you know what?
No one knows who that is.
I love Les.
Is he still doing comedy?
You always have to come up and introduce the guy like it was in front of you. And like, I would forget my entire act because I just didn't want to forget the name of the guy who I was supposed to say, let's hear it for.
Yeah.
So once I got that name out, I'm like, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done for the night.
You remember those gigs we had to do in Boston where you drive for hours to do a half hour? Like, I went to Machado.
Yeah, and those were ones only like three blocks away in Boston traffic. Am I right, people? The traffic?
Hey, he'll be here all week.
Oh, I probably will be.
We're here with Ed Driscoll. In a few minutes, we're going to talk. You don't mind if you hang out while we call Harry Shearer?
Yeah, people are so bored. I'm on interviews, and they interview other people while I'm on. Every show I go on does this. So
are you serious?
How bad can I
do?
Is
that happened?
No, it's never happened.
That'd be hilarious if you were on a TV show, and they just pushed you aside.
Yeah,
like
we didn't
want to hurt his feelings, yeah. No, but we're here with Ed Driscoll. The book is Spilled Gravy. You can link to it on markmaron.com. We're going to be back. We're going to call Harry Shearer and let him sell his wares. Stay with us.
And now he's dreamy, he's sensitive, he's Mark Maron.
From NBC Tel Records comes the next great CD soundtrack of one of your all-time favorite TV shows. The first ever full-length CD featuring Tom Brokaw, the NBC Nightly News, singing songs in the key of L.
Laurel Canyon Boulevard, Larchmont Boulevard, I love L.A.
I think most people who watch Nightly News don't even know that I sing. And yet, it's something I did each broadcast, you know, between the stories, just to keep myself alert.
Way above, you've got me on my knees. Way above.
That, of course, was Harry Shearer. Harry Shearer is one of the legends of modern comedy, from his work way back with The Credibility Gap through his work on the film This Is Spinal Tap, Saturday Night Live, and The Simpsons. He's got a DVD out right now. It's called Now You See It, and a CD called Dropping Anchors. You can go to harryshearer.com. He's had his own radio show, Le Show, on the air on public radio for 12 years now. Now he's here on my show. Welcome, Harry Shearer.
Thank you, Mark, but it's 21 years. You got the numerals reversed. I've been doing that.
Oh, you're making fun of my dyslexia.
Freaking show for 21 years. Is that what it is?
No, I'm kidding.
You should
get someone to read over this stuff before
you should join DAM. You know that organization?
Yeah.
Mothers Against Dyslexia?
Yeah, I will. That's what I'm going to do. No, I'm sorry. Maybe it was on. Where did I get that information? Well, 21 years. That's a long time to do radio.
Tell me about it.
Do you like it?
Yeah, because I only do an hour a week.
So now let me ask you a couple questions about comedy. We're sitting here with Ed Driscoll, who's also a comic, and my partner, Jim Earle, is a comic. Now, you've had a tremendous career. You've been going at it a long time in all different mediums. What have you noticed has been the biggest changes, you know, culturally as far as comedy is concerned? Do you still have the same effect that it used to?
Oh, wow.
I mean, because you were there at the beginning. I had
at the beginning of comedy, Mark.
At the beginning of, like, what I consider modern comedy. Like, I had Phil Proctor in here a couple weeks ago from Firesign, and you guys were doing great radio comedy, like, in the late 60s. And I feel like something has been diminished. Am I wrong?
Well, I think I believe that you train your audience. There's no such thing as the mass audience. Every performer, whether it's in comedy or music or any other, you know, mainly comedy and music, that's successful has built an audience and then trained it as to here's what I do and here's why you like it. And it takes, I think, given the belief on Madison Avenue and in the executive suites of the networks and the cable systems, that the public's attention span has shrunk, which I don't believe, but I believe it has shrunk on Madison Avenue and in the executive suites, to get people to, you know, sit down, take a minute, give you more than a minute and a half of their time. I think that's harder today than it was a while back.
I think that
things are more complicated today. Back when we were doing, the Credibility Gap was doing a lot of anti-Vietnam War comedy, which we had a lot of material to work with. I think things, either we were younger and it looked simpler, or things were a little simpler, and not to say that I don't think this war is a crock, but you know, it's. I think it's tougher to break through with that kind of material these days.
Yeah, and there's also like so many outlets. I mean, there's a million TV stations. You have the internet. There's a million ways to do it.
Wait, the inter what?
I want to hip you to that. Okay. They have an internet. It's called.
Wow.
Yeah, and people get right on there and they sell their stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know.
I'm gonna have my people look into that.
You have people. That's good.
Well, that's what I have instead of the internet.
The people.
I have inter people.
Good, but I think it's kind of fascinating because it seems to me that the people wanted that Madison Avenue to talk about executives. They wanted to lessen the people's attention span so they could sell things more effectively. The bastards.
Well, I think it that may be the reason. I think it's just they really have the attention span of gnats.
Yeah, exactly.
And they assume that we're like them.
Yeah. They want to make us all children.
Definitely the culture moves in the direction of infantilizing and juvenilizing us.
Juvenilizing, yeah. So you're in New Orleans now. Was your home affected by Katrina, and how long have you lived down there?
I've been here for about 10 years. I had to replace my fridge because the contents were stinky. I just noticed driving around or walking around that it's now a totally a thing of the past, but for 6 months it was, as familiar a piece of street furniture as street lights or bus benches to see all these gaffer taped up refrigerators, lined up, on the street because people had thrown out their fridges, you know, just taping them up. Please don't open, please don't open. And every once in a while you could walk past one that was not perfectly taped shut, and you get a little whiff, and you, I get it. Oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
Bad stuff.
Thank you, Lord. So that's all, you know, I was very lucky. I'm on high ground, and but, you know, I just took a chopper tour. I've been driving around the area just to give myself, you know, a bearing since I came back in November, but I had the opportunity to take a chopper tour on Monday and see, when you see the entire scale of the devastation in 1 hour before you have a chance to go numb, it really is still startling, even after having been here, as I say, since November.
It's horrifying. I went out there to do a benefit a couple of weeks ago, and I just couldn't believe it.
I mean, on the other hand, you know, the populated part of town is doing amazingly well and coming back in a remarkable fashion.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's hard to get across the idea that both things are true, that the populated slice of the city is doing incredibly well given all the obstacles. And people are coming back and working on their homes and more every day. I was talking to somebody today who said, you know, the new community center for New Orleans is Home Depot.
Right. That's where everyone's meeting in the parking lot. Yeah. So did you go see, are you there now? Did you go see Bruce Springsteen or anybody?
I did not. Oh. I went to see Keb Moe.
Oh, that's good.
And my favorite guitar player in the whole wide world is Sonny Landreth from about 3 hours west of here in Louisiana, who is just an amazing slide guitar player. And I like to see the people who you can only see here.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I got to see, I saw some local guy who just plays like once a night in a bar down there. I can't remember what his name is. He's an old blues guy. I don't know.
Snooks, not Snooks.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Blind, yeah. Right?
No, he wasn't blind, but
Were you blind that night?
I yeah, maybe I was.
Yeah.
But so let's talk about the CD and the DVD. Now,
cool.
The DVD is basically your greatest hits from movies and from TV, yes?
From TV, all from TV, from Saturday Night Live, from HBO, and from a couple of other projects that I did, like a film I did for the David Letterman show way back when. So it's all, and a couple of, as I say, HBO specials. So it's all my favorite stuff from TV that I've done.
So can you share, I don't like to be general and ask questions like this, but you work with a lot of the best comics in the world, at least mm-hmm. in improvisational comics, and with Michael McKean and all those cats.
Mm-hmm.
What has been the real highlight for you, or what has been the most awkward moment for you in show business?
The most awkward moment was when I was 8 years old, and I was a child actor on the Jack Benny show, and we used to stand in the hall waiting to be introduced to the audience before the show, and Don Wilson would call the names, and the door would open, and you'd run out. I was this little 8-year-old kid wearing my blazer,
yeah.
And I'm chatting to somebody, you know, whoever was kind enough to chat to an 8-year-old boy, and or I think they were kind. And the door opened, and I heard Don Wilson saying, "Harry! Harry!" And, of course, I trot out on stage, and I'm expecting my little scattering of applause.
Yeah.
And instead, I get the biggest laugh I've ever gotten in my life.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you get into comedy so you can control why people laugh at you.
Oh, I never thought of it like that.
And so I'm totally flustered, and I sit down, and fortunately, the guy who had befriended me when I started working at the show, the great Mel Blanc, was sitting next to me, and I said, "What'd I do?" I thought my zipper was open or something.
Yeah.
He was calling for Mary Livingston. So that was the awkward moment. Mary and this little picture walked out. My most fun, I think, was doing Mighty Wind, the movie, and then the tour. The tour was just the most amazing thing imaginable, because everybody from the movie participated in the tour. And we got to be on stage and watch each other kind of move the story forward from the movie every night improvisationally. And Chris, who had, you know, conceived and directed the movie and written it along with Gene Levy, was on the tour, but he wasn't going to direct. He had no supervision, and he said, "I just want to play. So I'm just playing my instrument, and you do what you want." So it was amazing to see, you know, in a business where people think that the talent has to be rigorously controlled or they'll act like monkeys, these people set free on a tour and inventing this wonderful material to move the story like 6 months forward from where the movie had left it. And we were all watching each other every night, because there were amazing surprises every night. And then we got to play music and hang out. It was great fun.
That's amazing. So actual sub-stories started happening on the road, and
you bring
them on stage with
everything,
you?
Everything moved along, and every show you saw, it got a little farther. And my character, who had, you know, of course, was along in his sex change, had toned down his hair color, had learned that, you know, that shade of blonde really wasn't right by that point.
Oh, that's hilarious. Was that was any of that taped?
No.
Oh, that's great. And how were the crowds for that? Did you draw a lot of good crowds?
Oh, yeah, we sold out everywhere. But the one that was most interesting was, you know, everybody said, "Well, you'll draw that folk crowd, that folk crowd." And at the town hall we did, and then we went down the coast to Washington, D.C., and played this rock club, the 930 Club, where there were no seats, everybody was standing, and it was all kids in their early 20s, standing, three shows sold out, singing all the lyrics to all the songs.
Oh, yeah. Well, you guys, that whole crew of you have a tremendous amount of respect, and certainly the young hipster comedy fans.
Man, well, that's when I thought, hey, we could make some money doing this. Well, these kids, they got bucks.
Now, the CD, Dropping Anchors, this is stuff from the radio show?
It's mainly stuff from the radio show. It's basically comedy sketches and songs, one song, about the people who've suddenly all in one shift have left the TV news anchoring job. You know, Dan Rather, Tom Brokaw, Ted Koppel, Barbara Walters, and even the missing in action Aaron Brown.
Oh, great.
I'd made fun of them on the radio show all the time that they were on the air, and I thought the only fair thing to do was make even more fun of them as they're on their way out.
Well, you can get both of those at harryshearer.com. Nice website, by the way.
Thank you. And they're also actually at retail.
Oh.
You can go into, what do they call, record stores?
No, they don't have those anymore. You can go to another online outlet.
Oh, okay. No, but they're actually in record stores, you know, while they're still around.
Well, I want to thank you today for giving this bit of wisdom here. You can control why people laugh at you. That's just changed the way I think about what
I
do.
Well, that's the premise of why you go into comedy.
No, it's great, because it was really, because I just called it a tremendous fear of embarrassment, but that's really what it is.
That's what you're trying to do, is like, oh, I made them laugh at me.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm good now.
It took me a long time to realize on stage that I have to let them laugh at me, even if they're not laughing with me.
That's right. They really are laughing at you.
I know. Thanks, Harry Shearer. It was great talking to you.
My pleasure. Thank you, man.
You take care.
You too. Bye.
All right. So when we come back, More with Ed Driscoll. We've got Jim's doing a new thing, and we're going to talk to Tim Grieve in a little while from Salon about politics. And, man, that was good. That was a lot better than I'm you know, he's a good guy.
Yeah, no, bring on Ed Driscoll, though.
Yeah, no, Driscoll's coming on.
I think we're done.
Where's Ed Driscoll?
Yeah, where's Ed Driscoll?
All right, here we go.
And now, send in for a free information kit, Mark Maron.
Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, welcome, man.
Hey, it's nice to see you. Ed Driscoll is here. His book, available at bookstores, too.
And on Harry Shearer's website, strangely enough.
You can find it in the I'm Sad section or the Hopeless section.
Give It All Up section. They'll even let you steal that book, like they don't really care. They hand it to you.
If you're at the end of your rope section.
Do you realize you were like the Harry Shearer misinformation guy on that interview? I mean, that was a great interview. Like
21 years.
12 years, 21.
Yeah.
And it's also movies, just TV.
Just
and you're Christopher Guest? No, Harry Shearer.
Well, you know, sometimes you got to... I do it all on purpose. That's my trick, Ed. I humanize it by screwing it up. I'm like
that was the most human interview I've ever heard.
Let me say what your book's name is so people will buy it. Spilled Gravy, Advice on Love, Life, and Acceptance from a Man Uniquely Unqualified to Give It. We were just talking about this, and I thought the reason I got it in my head that it would be difficult to talk to Harry Shearer is I was told he was sort of difficult. And, of course, I listened to whoever the hell.
I never heard that.
You bastard. You're not going to.
We've heard it about all of us. Probably that's what we were
saying.
But
that's what I realized is that, who the hell am I to judge? I've got two friends. You know, I've got the main one, and then I got the guy I go to when the main one's tired.
Or it's executives. Like you said, it shows that they may not particularly like Harry or you or me, or, you know, because they figure we're difficult with everything, and I guess we are.
You're talking
about Comedy Central, and that's so funny, too. You're like, you made all the execs there mad.
You don't even know what...
Yeah, you know how I did? I made them mad by saying good morning.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, quite frankly.
What is it about certain people that just can... It slides right off them, and then there are people that have this impact. Is there something I should be proud of because of that skill?
No, it's funny. Yeah, no sense of humor at... You know, at a place called Comedy Central. That's kind of strange. Not all of them, but a decent amount, because I just did a show there with Spade and so forth, and boy, was that interesting.
Were you writing on the entertainment show?
On his, Showbiz show, yeah.
And you're not doing it anymore?
No. I mean, you know, I enjoyed it what was there and had other stuff to do, but I mean, the amount of manipulation he's getting from people is...
What's been your worst experience in having a situation where you got to meet executives?
You know, I mean...
You don't have to say which ones.
No, that's why I'm trying to remember their names, because that's why I want to trash them.
Yeah.
No. You know what it is? I mean, it's just very rare that you find ones that are helpful. There's some really good ones, but some are just don't get it. And, again, I don't get it. If it's not your thing, like if I hire an electrician to do my house, I don't go over and go, hey, maybe you should hook that wire to that wire. It's like, no, I don't know how to do that, so I hire you and you do that. Well, a lot of network people will hire somebody as a comedy writer, and then they'll say, like, well, I don't get it. And it's like, well, I know you don't, but if you can trust me and my background, you know, I've faked it for 20 years for these people that I know what I'm doing. So if you'd let me do your job, and there's a lot of – and the same thing, they'll hire a director, and then they'll try and tell the director how to direct. And it's like, why do you want to do that?
Right.
I'm too lazy. I'll be happy to delegate. You know, I don't even want to do my job.
They should just
I don't want to do other people's jobs.
Take the risk and let the guy do what they do and see what happens, as opposed to managing.
And some do, and the really good ones do. But it's, you know, they seem to be few and far between.
I had a meeting with an agent once who had just gotten a new BlackBerry thing. It was before BlackBerries. It was like a Casio thing. And I'd never met this guy before, and I needed representation. I sat down, and he looked at me, and he held this thing up. He goes, have you got one of these? I go, no, I don't. He says, you got to get one. All right. And then for a half an hour, he sold me the Casio. He did not ask me what I wanted to do with my career. He's like, look at this. If you push this button, it'll show you your whole address. This went on for 20 minutes. And then he's like, well, it's great meeting you. Okay, you take care.
Right.
And he's still...
if I finally get someone to represent me and make some money, I'll buy one of those.
I'll buy one of those.
Thanks for your time today.
I couldn't believe it.
That's hilarious.
So now, the book covers... your book kind of goes back and forth between, like, it starts with you breaking up with somebody again, and then you go back and forth throughout your life, starting very young with
ping-ponging,
your...
Ping-ponging.
Yeah. Yes. And then going into your life and show business. Now, who have you written for?
I write for them all. Dennis Miller and Billy Crystal. I do all the Oscar stuff with them.
Can I ask you some personal questions?
About me?
About other people?
Oh, see, no one ever wants to ask me personal questions. Again, it's always about one of these other guys. Well, maybe.
What's it like to work with you?
I can't promise I'll answer. Oh, I'm a complete... Well, I'm not sure what I can say.
Ass.
Very difficult to work with.
No, I want to ask you about you, but that's all in the book. Now, are you and Dennis still
How
friends?
How do you know? You've never read this.
I read 20 pages of the book.
He doesn't like the homework.
First of all, the book is only 15 pages, so I know you're lying.
Oh, no, it was. Secondly, I read 20 pages, and I went to bed with the book. I was reading it in
now
bed.
You're creeping me.
I know. I wanted to creep you out.
Well, you've done it.
All right.
Mission accomplished, my friend.
So Dennis Miller, are you guys still buddies?
Yeah, you know, he's always been good to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we are. So.
And is he back on the sort of like, I heard that his last special, did you work on that?
No, I didn't. Oh. I actually just saw it, though, the one from Vegas.
I heard it was good.
Yeah, it's funny. He's a funny guy, and here's what I find interesting about it. Everybody's, oh, he's so right-wing. I was like, it's not as big a shift in his position as you might think.
No, right, yeah.
When I used to work for him, when we did Dennis Miller Live, he'd go on there, and a lot of his positions were very middle, and some were really pretty conservative. But because he's this smart, hip guy who cusses, people always say, oh, he's real liberal. And I used to shake my head and go, like, you're not listening to him, because he's never really been real liberal.
Right. I just,
so it's not as big a, it wasn't as big a shift as a lot of people thought or whatever.
But I felt like a lot of it was that he freaked out.
Well, yeah, I think he did, as a lot of us did, and those were freaky times.
Yeah, and I remember I was trying to find out years ago, because I knew you wrote about him, you wrote for him, I was trying to find you online.
I wrote about him too, but that's in my journal.
Yeah. But there's another Ed Driscoll out there. Some sort of conservative writer guy.
I'll kill him.
Yeah, you got to go kill
him.
Oh,
no, there's a guy, because there you go, because I tried to get, like, Ed Driscoll online, and some guy has, like, EdDriscoll.com.
Yeah.
And then he's writing the stuff, and I'm like, oh, that's good.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Like, that can't be the same guy. It was such a cheesy
Plus, he's getting more, he's doing better than me. That's what I resent about it.
So, now...
I have EdDriscollOnline.com, so...
Okay, there you go.
Check that one out, kids.
Oh, man.
That's fun. That's the real guy.
We coming up on the top of the hour. So, are we good?
Am I getting kicked off?
No, you don't have to.
I'm having so much fun.
You can hang out. I don't mind. You got to promise to tell one really great story.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Since when have you made that a prerequisite to be on the show?
On a radio show? Yeah. Why don't you just hang out and belittle me for the rest of the show?
Now you're talking.
All right, we'll be back in a second.
Live from Burbank, California, where it burns. It's the Mark Maron Show. And now he crashed his Ferrari. Mark Maron.
My million-dollar Ferrari.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jim. Our guest in studio, Ed Driscoll, still hanging out.
Hello.
You know. I was
television squiggy. You know.
Harry Shearer knows that guy. What's that guy's real name?
Oh, God. What is it? I know he's a Pirates fan.
He's a Pirates fan. Yeah. What was
nice.
It? What did you say that out loud so other people could hear it, or you just said it for me?
Just for you, David Lander.
David Lander.
Continue.
Yeah, every once in a while, Bill pulls one out, and they're weird ones too. The things he remembers, and you don't know why he remembers them, but
he didn't know it was 21 years Harry Shearer had been on, but he knew David Lander.
Yeah, something comes through the haze.
That's all you can ask for.
Yeah, there's Squiggy comes through the haze. Maybe I wrote it down wrong. I don't know. What the hell? What do you got to keep bringing that up?
I'm not blaming you.
All right, man. Just as long as we straighten this out. This is getting crazy. Ed.
It's nuts.
We're not going to talk about Dennis anymore, because that would entail me having an opinion about a friend of yours, and there's no reason for you to
enough
be,
of that.
Yeah,
man.
Let's talk about... You wrote for Morgan Freeman?
How are you trashing all my friends?
Why don't you trash somebody?
Great known comedian.
You trash somebody.
I've trashed you.
Well, okay.
Which doesn't seem fair, but I know you.
Here, I'll see if you'll answer this one. Who's the guy?
I'm walking off.
The comic where you're like, the one comic in your head, screw that guy, he's doing me, he took my stuff, and, you know, to hell with him.
Well, who would take my stuff? I mean, God bless him.
Oh, you're a genius, though.
I've influenced some people, perhaps. Yeah, okay. Is probably the nice way to put it.
All right.
Pretty funny you say that. Because I'd actually heard Mark Maron said in some names of people that you thought might have been influenced by me.
Yeah.
It's nice of you to say it, but I can't. So.
All right. Well, look.
You're the man.
So you work with Morgan Freeman?
Yeah, which was like one of the weirder ones. You know, apparently the thing. Like, here you go. Well-known comic. So they hire me, Morgan Freeman. I'm like, you got to be, this is weird. They're like, oh, he works for Crystal and Dennis Miller. So we sit down. Yeah, he's a great actor. I have like no idea. We sit down, and he's doing this show. He's hosting a show, and he wants, and I said, you've got a problem because I'm not funny. And I said, well, neither am I. So I'm like, this is going to be great, Morgan. Yeah. Get paid up front, you know.
Yeah.
And he said, I don't know what to do. And I said, let's just talk about you not being funny, which was what we did. And we had him go up there, and people were so surprised. He's up there, I think I'm funny. Million Dollar Baby was funny. Gravitas is funny. And he did this thing like he was angry why people didn't think he was funny. And he was hilarious because he was able to sell it. You know? That was one of the weirder ones. And for Barry Manilow.
Barry Manilow.
I wrote him for.
He's like got this huge resurgence going on.
Well, due to me. Can we just say it?
Yeah.
No, when he was starting up his Vegas show, they said, oh, he needs, you know, stuff for his show in between, so you're going to write jokes for him, you know. So it was like the worst thing. I'm like, okay. So I get up there, and I write the jokes that make the whole crowd leave. That's what I do. So I get up there, and I meet him, and I'm like, oh, here, and, you know. Well, I mistakenly wrote, like, 100 jokes about him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, for you? I'll be right back. Yes. I just assumed. And but, no, strangely enough, and he turned out he's a great guy, and he has this huge sense of humor and loved stuff, making fun of himself and stuff. And so we ended up doing that. So you work with some weird things that you don't think
did you get to see the show?
Guys.
Did you? I mean, did
you? The first 2 weeks. It was only...
That must be
how do you
cool.
not love it? I'm sorry, man. I guess that's nice. I'm at the age where I don't care if people know. Yeah, I do like his songs. Weekend New England, great song. Uh-huh. I don't care. I don't care anymore.
Oh, Mandy.
Great song. How do you sit there and watch a show and get you're supposed to pretend I don't enjoy this? It's like I do.
I find that I do that. I find that I have to. I have to put some. I have to put a wall up to some things, or else I'm embarrassed.
No,
with my,
man.
If
no,
I start tearing,
go.
I'll tear up at just about anything. Commercials.
A lot of weepy stuff. Well, yeah. He wrote all those great commercials, you know, too. He wrote the original McDonald's.
Which
thing,
one?
And he wrote, Like a Good Neighbor. And, oh, I probably
State
can't
Farm
do this.
Is there.
But he wrote that. You know, he wrote all these great commercials.
What do you got, Jim? Let's give us a. How about? Did he write this one?
Amalgamated Bank.
Nah, probably not.
That was Michael Stipe.
Oh,
I was frequently mistaken for each other.
How about the other one?
Get into the zone, AutoZone.
That's Barry. Yeah, that's definitely Barry.
Did you now? I interviewed Billy Crystal once. He thinks the world of himself.
I don't know what to say. It's like seriously, to me, like the nicest guy I've ever worked with.
He was. You know what?
Sorry, he really is.
No, look. You know, I try to bait people to be mean, and you're not going
to
do it.
No, but not to Billy anyway.
Billy, actually, to be honest with
you, nobody has been nicer to me in my career than Billy.
To be honest with you, I interviewed him and I indulged him completely, and I'm telling you, it's all my own resentment. You're supposed to talk to me like a fellow recovery person and say, Mark, why don't you just bring the attention back to yourself? Don't put it on other people.
Right. You better keep your side of the street clean, mister.
Right. Thank
don't
you, man.
Don't worry about others.
Thank you, man. Yeah, because, I mean, you know, he's a huge talent, and he's done great things. And I interviewed him once, and all I could think of, like, why the hell am
so
I not
going
like
this? So what we met, he was going, you know, my Broadway show, like your shows, Mark. Is that what you wanted him to bring you into his world?
Yeah,
like,
maybe a little of that.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. Treat you like a peer.
But now, when he asked, now in terms of writing jokes, so in order to do that with these guys, you've really got to sort of assess their style. You know, everyone's different, and you just write for their style.
Yeah, trying to get them to do all the stuff like me just hasn't worked. So there you go. That's what you're talking about. People will take my style if I don't ask them, but they'll say, hey, you want to deliver something like me? No. No, I don't, Ed. And, yeah, so it is a little weird.
I guess, you know, it's so weird. You know, you just bring... You know, you made me think of this thing about, you know, why don't I just let myself like people as opposed to fight it? Why don't
I
just do
I think
that?
That's what you got to do, man. That's why I'm here.
That's
why
me
I'm
out?
Here, yeah. To help
See,
you
that's what I expect from
this.
All my guests is to help me out.
And that's what it's about. And people call you selfish. And here you just want everyone to help you.
Exactly.
See, if people would look at that.
I'm a need machine.
You are.
And just remember the words of Harry Shearer. You can control why people laugh at you.
Well, you know what? He actually said... You get in to try to do that.
Yeah.
He didn't say you actually can.
Yeah.
I hate to burst that little bubble. The one positive thought you did have in your head, I'm just trashing right now, I realized. Because he's saying you try to do that. He's not saying you do that.
Who are you writing for now? What's going on? Can you write for me?
Well, it's why I'm here. I'm figuring if you guys need a little punch, I'm really doing nothing right now. No, I'm pushing the book and doing my own stand-up. And just I'm writing for ESPN, the ESPY Awards, because you know I'm a big sports nut.
How is
writing for Lance Armstrong, so that should be interesting.
Really?
Another great known comedian.
And do you, a lot of jokes about testicular?
One ball,
testicular
one ball,
cancer.
Sheryl Crow, it's all that stuff.
He's not with her anymore, is he?
No.
Oh, okay. So that's it? You can take the bitch left me approach kind of thing?
Yeah, and well, she got, you know, half of them, so there you go.
She did?
That's where the other ball went, because they break up. See, are you happy? No, I'm fired from that job. You happy?
Yay!
I made fun of this guy's testicular cancer.
Yeah, I guess you'll
I've
be
come
working.
To the dark side once again, Mark.
Oh, how did it feel?
Are you
feel?
Happy?
I'm going to stop all of it. I've learned a lot, man. You really helped me out today, man. I'm not... I'm not going to drink today because you're here.
Oh, well, then I haven't done my job.
Oh, stop
I wanted to invite you down to have a cocktail, my friend.
Ed Driscoll, the book is right here. Spilled Gravy, Advice on Love, Life, and Acceptance from a Man Uniquely Unqualified to Give It.
And there's, that's the only copy, so please don't mess
up. I'll share it around. So just, I guess, write me an email at the site, and I'll let you borrow my copy. Thanks, Ed.
Or it's at Amazon.com.
Yes. Yeah.